Forget TikTok.
TikTok boring now.
Download Knock Knock and accept the terms of service.
Knock Knock.
The most perfect app for your mobile phone with excellent and trustable features like
Knock Knock messages.
Send unlimited important messages to friends through our free and secure service.
Knock Knock photos.
Do you have friends agitating for democracy in Hong Kong? Take as many photos of them as you want. It's free.
Knock Knock address book.
Store detailed contact information of everyone you know. Trust Knock Knock.
Knock Knock passwords.
All your most important passwords in one handy place, backed up to our server in Beijing for peace of mind.
Knock Knock navigation.
Easily highlight gas stations, points of interest, and any military installations you drive past.
Knock Knock wallet.
All your banking and credit card information. All of it. Trust Knock Knock.
Knock Knock app.
Tiananmen never happened.
It's totally free. You're listening to Questionable Material, produced in New York by Jack Helmuth and Brian Sack. QMPodcast.com. This is episode number 42.
Can't see you still. That's great.
Oh, I know. No, I know. I know you can't see me. That here, I'm going to give you a teaser.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a spoiler alert.
Okay.
You're never going to be able to see me on this computer. I can't figure this out. So we don't need to update that each week. I can't do it until you drive down here and fix it for me.
Well, am I Geek Squad?
Well, you're the huge fucking nerd brigade.
It's like an hour and a half away. So I to drive and fix your laptop that you forgot to bring when you came up here last week.
But I got huge fucking nerd brigade protection.
Yeah.
And so you're supposed to come whenever I.
It's going to take me 30 seconds to fix your issue. And I just hop back in my car, grab a bottle of Estancia Pinot Noir from your wife's cabinet and drive back up.
Yeah, but you know what? That was actually the last of her Estancia, which is a wine that she actually likes and was quite sad to not have it.
Well, we have it.
I know you do. And you'll have it, I'm sure, 5 years from now when we come to visit.
No. We're going to make some spaghetti sauce or something. I'm sure it'll come in handy.
Can you make Molotov cocktails out of a shitty bottle of wine?
For peaceful protesting, yes.
Oh, my goodness. I'm feeling vulgar today. I've used two curse words that I thought were used appropriately to be funny.
Within seconds of starting this podcast.
I know.
It's just shameful.
Really filthy language.
Yeah, shameful.
Brian, I understand that you had other guests. This past weekend?
This past weekend, we were with other people.
So you guys are seeing other people?
We're seeing other people.
Because it's weird. We never discussed that. Betsy and I thought that I was sort of an exclusive thing.
You're just jealous because I sent you pictures of more steak than we had when you were here.
Yes, it was much more. It was enough to probably feed everybody. That's how much more it was.
There was a ton left over, honestly.
I hope your wife heard that and understood what she's done wrong.
You know, I'll talk to her about it, but she's goes to the dance of her own drum machine. As they say.
Is that what they say in Poland?
I think it's a Polish expression. She goes to the dance of her own drum machine.
Man, it's strange that country hasn't been more successful. That's a very smart, very catchy saying.
Yeah, I know. They have some great ones, and that's one of them.
What are some of your other favorite Polish expressions?
Oh, I sure set myself up for that, didn't I? Well... it's like bringing a banana to a mouse factory is one that I've never found the right time to use it, but it's there. It's in the holster ready to drawn and used whenever the situation arises.
Yeah.
She's three whiskers short of a launch party.
That's so Polish.
Yeah, super Polish.
You can feel like you're in Central Europe at that point.
No, yeah. I mean, if you start speaking that stuff there, they will think you're a native.
Well, but then you said, what was it, like the all-time classic one? Even though it's a little rote, to you at this point, what you said there was like an all-time classic one of those.
Oh yeah. Either it's Wednesday or we've been occupied again. Which is a kind of a, you know,
yeah, that's the one.
It's a catch all. They use that for everything.
Whew.
Yep. Polish expressions.
And which is it usually?
They've been occupied again.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah. I mean, because Wednesdays only come around every 7 days.
Right. And it's just like, they wait, you know, they're like, who's in charge? It's pretty much that. Instead, most Polish people, when they get up in the morning, they don't say good morning. They say,
oh, really?
Yeah. You say, who's in charge? So you get up, you come downstairs, the family's gathered around in the living room, and you're just like, who's in charge? That's the thing. You just want to find out who's calling the shots that particular day.
Right. Exactly.
That's how it works.
You want to know who to salute and who to throw a bottle at.
Right. You know, you're like, yeah, you have a little powwow. Like, okay, these are the people we're going to throw the Molotovs at. And these are the people we need to say yes or no, sir, to.
Right. 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 Well, they must need a lot of bottles of Estancia in Poland to throw at people.
Well, they do vodka, which has a higher proof and is therefore more flammable. Like Estancia Molotov cocktails, you know, Pinot Noir, it's good for staining. If you want to stain a federal building, you throw a Pinot Noir Molotov. But if you want to set it on fire, you're going to have to use, you know, spiritus or vodka.
Right. I'm so glad we're having this discussion, because every day back when I used to work, I would go by a Brooks Brothers store, and I would always think to myself, I don't know whether this store should be burned down or if it should just stain all the clothes in it. What would you do in a situation like that? Like for a Brooks Brothers.
Well, you know, you look at it and you're like, oh, that's a store. It's somebody trying to make a living. But then you're like, oh, but it's Brooks Brothers. It's a chain. But it's, you know, but still, there's a lot of people employed by that chain trying to make a living. But they sell suits. And who wears suits? Wall Street pigs.
Yep.
That's who.
Yep.
Capitalists. Good. So here's a store that's helping these capitalists not be naked. Well, I want naked capitalists.
Mm-hmm.
So
good.
Obviously after that drawn out thought process, I lob a staining Molotov cocktail through their window.
No, that makes sense. But at that point, haven't you already driven about a mile away after that decision making process?
Yeah, that's why nothing's really happened with my revolution. But I'm hopeful that I'm going to be able to process this stuff faster and be more violent, more spontaneously, instead of thinking about it and then coming to a conclusion when I'm a mile past the store.
Well, let's help you get ready for your revolution, because I know this is something you really want to do, and that this is the type of thing that you know, makes for good Instagram posts where you have pictures of you starting a revolution, you know, like so many of the white people out there. So for the Brian Revolution,
yeah,
you're walking by a McDonald's, and what do you do? How do you revolt?
Well, you go to the drive-thru window.
Awesome.
With your Molotov cocktail.
Ooh.
And you order a whole bunch of food. First of all, you order a ton of food. So, okay. What you want to do is make them waste product. So you get up, you pull up to the ordering thing, and you go, listen, I need, 412 cheeseburgers and 87 Big Macs and, 203 quarter pounders and blah, 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 large fries and yada, yada. And
just one large fry.
Just one large fry, just to throw them off. And then you say, and also I'm going to need a ton of napkins, lots and lots, cool, like bags full of napkins. And then you pull up to the window to pay, and they open up the thing, and you just whip your Molotov cocktail in there. And, Jesus, you know, they got a bag full of napkins. I mean, that's just like another incendiary device. Before you know it, that whole thing's on fire. They're screaming, they're yelling. Word of advice. Don't use a 2-liter bottle for a Molotov cocktail, a plastic 2-liter bottle. They don't shatter.
Okay.
So all I did was throw that through the window. It landed on the floor. They kind of looked at me, and then they asked me for $3,217.43 for my order. At which point I hit the gas. Second time I came back. This time I was smarter. I had a glass container, but it had formerly been for olive oil. It was slippery. When I went to throw it, I actually hit the roof of my car inside, the inside roof of the car. It bounced back and it landed in my friend Armando's lap. You know, if you thought Stella Liebeck got a lot of money for burning her crotch with hot coffee, you should see what Armando deserves for not having a crotch anymore. Totally embarrassing. They looked at me. We just sped off. Armando screaming. I took him right to the hospital. But of course, by then, the majority of his crotch, including his important bits, gone, incinerated, crispy, just horrible, horrible.
Oh, God, that's so sad.
It is sad. That's what Armando's wife said when she left him. Because how do you stay with somebody who doesn't have a penis?
No, you don't. I've learned that the hard way.
You marry somebody, you know, through thick and thin, you know, sickness and health, but you don't count on them losing their genitals.
Well, that's why they specifically don't have that line in your vows.
That's right.
Because even the Catholic Church, even the Pope would be like, oh, I have dissolved this marriage.
Yeah.
Because he got no dingles.
Because he talks like Chef Boyardee. Pope Boyardee. So that's what I would do with McDonald's, except for the Armando part. You just got to get it right. I'll be honest. It's hard to throw a Molotov cocktail from inside of a car. So far, I haven't been able to burn down a McDonald's.
But, which is a shame, because some of the dumbest people in the world can burn down a McDonald's. But I will say you've cost McDonald's about $10,000 in food.
I have.
What is the Brian Revolution about? What is your message? What are your goals? What's the end goal? You know, tell me about your organization.
We're just against bad things. So, anti-hunger. We're anti-racism. We're anti-being mean to be anti-bullying.
Good.
And anti-abuse of domesticated pets.
Weird. Okay.
Anti-lumber.
Lumber.
Anti-environment killing people. Just anti-hornets. We've got a huge wide base of things we're against, but it's all good that we're against them because those are all bad things.
Well, I mean, hornets, yes. Lumber, not so much. I happen to love lumber.
Anti-fascism, obviously. That's a hot one.
Oh, that's big.
We're very anti-fascism. Yeah. And we will kick the living snot out of anybody who gives us any lip.
That's great, man. That's the way to fight those people.
Yep.
So, okay. Well, it seems like you're just sort of anti a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Has that helped with recruitment? Are you able to get a lot of like Hornet people together and Black Lives Matter people together and say, hey, here's the one thing we need to be fighting for?
Yeah. Well, you kind of got to figure out what they're really excited about. You know, you got to figure out what people's different causes are. So like we do what we call like a solicitation run. So we'll go down to a neighborhood park and just kind of look for people who look like they might be on our team. And we'll start talking to them and you'll be like, hey, man, I hate hornets. How about you? And you kind of look at them and, you know, if you get like a serious, like, yeah, I hate hornets too. Then you're like, oh, well, I just happen to be part of this organization that's anti-Hornet. Now, if they kind of gloss over and like, yeah, Hornets, I guess, I don't know. Then you kind of move on to the, yeah, but don't you hate people who eat meat? And then you kind of turn your head and you look at them and they might be like, actually, I eat meat. And you're like, okay. And you just keep working your way until you find something they don't like. And then you're like, I got this organization. I'm part of an organization that hates that thing you don't like. So why don't you join us?
So you just sort of keep going down the list.
We go down the list. The problem is, we get it. You know, we recruit these people. We get them all to the recruitment drive. They all show up. We have a little party, but everybody's there for different reasons. So, you know, the anti-meat people are really upset that we have a cold cut buffet and the anti-hornet people are pissed off because they don't see any hornets. And
oh, now wait a minute. I thought hornets was just code for Jews.
No, it's just actual hornets.
Oh,
Jews. We call them
totally different.
Jews. We say garden gnome.
Okay. Yeah. I'm slow on some of this lingo.
Yeah. Well, it's constantly evolving. Kind of like how you remember like 2 weeks ago, it was African-American. Now it's people of color, which also encompasses everybody else.
Right.
Right. So it's like that. We just keep changing words. It's very revolutionary if you think about it, because that's what revolutions are about. Change.
Yeah. So it's sort of like throwing a Molotov cocktail into a dictionary.
That's right.
Now that you're in such a leadership position, that this would make you a target. Have you had to go through sort of all those safety protocols for like finding a body double and that sort of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I looked for a body double. I ran some ads on Craigslist for a body double.
Did you place that in the men looking for men section?
Yep. Got it.
Okay. So did you find a lot of body doubles who were interested in meeting you?
I got a lot of people sending me pictures of their penis. Not sure what that's about.
Well, did it match your penis?
No, most of them, no. Because I'm white.
Got a lot of Latino dick pics.
A lot of POC, penises of color. So I got a lot of that. But I did get one guy who seems, I mean, he's very eager to be my body double. There's a slight problem.
Okay.
Is that he's, I guess the term is little person. So it's not exactly like a doppelganger. It's like a third ganger. Yeah. Cause it's like, he doesn't totally, he's a little gray haired. He's got that going for him, but he's fairly noticeably shorter than I am.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if people might pick up on that. If suddenly, you know, I get into a car, but you know, he exits at the end and walks down and people are like, wait a second. He looks a lot smaller than when Brian got in, but you know, these are things you work out. It's a revolution.
Absolutely. Viva la revolution. No, but what's the harm in hiring that guy? And like, give him a trial run. I mean, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? He's going to, you know, take a few bullets.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And the funny thing is, there was an attempt on me.
Oh geez.
And a car pulls up, window comes down, gun comes out. They fired at my body double, but since he's not as tall as I am, but by a large amount, the bullets went straight into the crowd behind him. So,
A relief.
I walked away, or I, in quotes, walked away unscathed.
Oh, that is a happy story, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Well done. That's great. Do you know did you ever figure out who was taking the shots at you?
Yes.
Oh, good. Who was it?
The Crips.
Why? Because you're not part of the Bloods. Why were the Crips taking a shot at you?
A stupid, you know, petty reason.
Okay.
Because we had some money from, we raised some money, and I thought, why not take out a billboard?
Okay.
And I took out a billboard, and for whatever reason, the billboard said, Bloods rule, Crips drool. And then at the bottom, it said Brian's Revolution. And I had my phone number and address. It was kind of like an accoutrement thing. But, you know, they're just, you know, how petty do you have to be? You're going to take shots at somebody because they just kind of had a position, had a belief.
Because they drool. Yeah, that they drool.
Yeah. So, you know, once they did that, I realized, okay, these guys are just sensitive dandies, snowflakes, which is what the second billboard said.
You're wasting a lot of your revolution money on billboards that I'm not sure what the end game of that is.
You sound just like my accountant. He's a garden gnome.
Oh, good. So he's a good accountant.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. Yeah. Garden gnomes value education. You know, it's important. You know, David Mamet in his book, he talked about, you know, they value education because it's the only thing you can take with you when everybody's coming to kill you.
Well, speaking of which, what was the response to that second billboard?
Oh, you know, another 12 people in the crowd. Joe Rogan.
He's great.
Just to talk and talk and talk and talk with the very famous people. We should try that.
We should. Hey, Brian, it's me, Jay Leno. You said you were looking for famous people.
Oh, hey, Jay. Welcome to the Brian Experience.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me. So what's your show about?
You know, it's a comedy podcast. I know
comedy.
There are a few of those out there, although a lot of them, you know, I've listened to, and they tend to not be as entertaining as one would hope, Jay, you know?
I do know. Yeah. You know what's entertaining is thinking about Monica Lewinsky in that blue dress. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a little dated, but certainly funny, good material.
What else is dated is Bill Clinton when he was dating all those interns.
Yeah, well, those intern jokes are good, I guess. They would have been better back in the 90s or so. But that's certainly funny stuff.
Oh, totally, totally funny stuff. So what else are you guys talking about on your program?
Oh, you know, we just say stuff. Why don't you talk to us about your car collection? You got a lot of cars. You love cars.
Oh, I love cars. I was just showing the Dancing Edos my car collection the other day. It was, hey, fellas, come on over and look at the garage. You know, it's anything I can do to stay away from my wife. You know, she's a real headache.
She's a headache. Your wife's a headache. So you spend a lot of time in your garage. How many employees do you have in your garage?
Oh yeah, I have lots of kids in there, you know, just helping out, fixing the, you know, my 1930 Triumph motorcycle, for example.
So you just kind of show up and take out a car and drive away and then come back and switch it out? Is that what you do?
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. I mean, I have no family. I have, you know, I'm sitting on about $500 million with no family, no children, and no job really to speak of. And so I just buy cars and just try and avoid being home.
So you have no children, really? That's sad.
Oh yeah. No, there's no children. Jay Leno's the garage was barren, as they say. Is that right, Kev? Where's Kev?
Kevin
Eubank, the Tonight Show band.
Yeah, he's not. You don't have the show anymore. The show has moved on. I believe Jimmy Fallon has taken your slot.
That's, well, he's taking it for now. Just you wait and see when those ratings go down. I bet the president of NBC is going to give an old Jay a call.
So you'd come back like he did with...
I'll come back.
Well, I mean, I'm not making that offer. I'm just saying it was a...
Question. I'm back. I'm out. I'm there. I'm actually outside the studio right now. Just have security butt me in, please.
And that was Jay Leno, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Jay, for joining us.
Hey, Brian, I'm back on now. Did you get Jay Leno on the show?
Yeah, we had Jay Leno. I'm just like, this is kind of like Joe Rogan. We got a famous person.
Yeah, this is what you were just talking about. We have famous people on the show.
Yeah, I know. Wow, that's a good start. I mean, now we just need to go for about 3 hours. Have you been watching baseball?
I have been watching baseball until my New York Yankees got through 3 whole games and then had their next games canceled.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah, because they were playing the team, the Philadelphia Phillies, who had just played the Miami Marlins, who had 14 players get COVID.
Mother of God. Seriously?
Half the team plus a bunch of coaches. And they played on Sunday, knowing already that 5 of their teammates had COVID, and they played the game anyway.
That just seems stupid.
It does seem stupid.
Who am I to judge?
Well, it's so funny that you say that, because you've actually been called up to be the manager of the Miami Marlins. Don Mattingly called me through the coughs and through his lungs collapsing. I was able to hear him say, "Brian Sack, manager."
Okay.
And giving me the privilege of letting you know you're a Major League Baseball manager.
And my team is now struck down with COVID. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so you basically have half a baseball team. So I would just love to talk to you sort of about your plans for the upcoming season.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, you've got a big series coming up against the Orioles. Yep. I was wondering what some of your strategies are going to be, you know, what the direction you're going to take the team in.
I'd like to beat the other team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I want to do stuff that will make my team defeat the other team in the art of baseball.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I think that's my plan. And I would like to do, have them do some plays and maybe do some grand slamming, doubles, tag up, you know, run the bases, touch the home plate before what's important to me is that they touch the home plate before the guy with the ball touches them.
Man.
Because you do that, you get a point.
So many managers don't talk about that, the real fundamental baseball.
Yeah, that's something I've been focused on because I've watched the game. I've studied it. And I won't say that I was riveted, but I would notice, you know, if the guy's running and he touches you before you touch the base, you don't get that point. So my thing would be like, listen, and I'd get all the players together. I'd be like, guys, there's going to be a guy with a ball in his glove and he's going to try to touch you. You know, act like he's got the plague or he's Jimmy COVID and you just got to dodge away from him. If he's trying to touch you, do not let that guy touch you.
Because he has the plague.
Yeah, I call it the plague. I call it, anybody who has the ball is the plague guy.
Your philosophy is finally right.
That's why I'm the head of the Miami Chieftains.
Marlins.
Marlins. They're looking for somebody who kind of studies things, lives out of the envelope, as they say in Poland.
Wow. It's definitely a back to basics approach to baseball, which I really appreciate. How are you going to keep your team safe? Because obviously we don't want any more of your players to get COVID.
They're going to have to wear masks.
Okay.
You know, you already wear a baseball hat to protect yourself from the sun.
Yeah.
And they wear that heavy hat to so that when they're hitting the ball, so that the ball doesn't hurt their heads.
Yeah. Helmet. Good.
Helmet. So they, I want to put like a face shield on the front of the helmet.
That's a good idea.
And then a mask, and then social distancing. I want the baseman to stay 6 feet away from the base. That way we'll kind of guarantee that nobody's going to transmit.
But how are you going to get if we're talking about your defenders, how are they going to touch like first base to make an out if they have to be 6 feet away from the runner who's running towards them?
Well, you know that expression, I wouldn't touch it with a 6 foot pole?
Yeah.
We're going to give every baseman a 6 foot pole. And at one end of the pole will have a ball holder.
Okay.
They can put the ball in that and then kind of reach out and touch the base. And the guy's out. You're out. As they say in the lingo.
Actually, as they say where?
In the lingo of baseball.
Oh, yeah, they do say that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, now I'm a little bit concerned as a baseball fan. I'm a little bit concerned about your management of the late innings of a baseball game, the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings, because my premise, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that you've never been sober past the seventh inning of a baseball game.
You know, baseball games, you got those big $14 beers.
Yes.
And if you're a typical drinker, you know, you're probably, you know, three an inning. So, you know, once you get
one per batter.
So sometimes, you know, if it looks like, you know, you see a pop fly, you're like, oh damn. And you just got a guzzle, right?
God.
Cause you know, they're going to catch it.
Okay.
And other times, you know, it drags on and you can just kind of sip it and enjoy your beer. So that's one of the more appealing things about baseball is kind of this random drinking pattern.
And you're saying that's the typical baseball drinker.
I would imagine that's most people.
I think that might be you.
That's not the sense that I get. But honestly, I don't remember anything past the third innings.
The third inning. I would imagine so.
Yeah, because, you know, your brain stops producing the ability to make memories once you spent a ton of money on beer.
Mm-hmm.
Because your brain kind of triggers like, okay, he's bought a lot of $14 beers. That's a lot of money. I'm going to stop remembering things.
Right. So there's no accountability for right. When you talk to your wife and she asks, where did those $14 times 42 go?
Right.
Goodness gracious.
Yep.
I'm a little worried, again, as speaking as the baseball fan, that you won't even know what to do in those later innings because you've never seen it. You know, a lot of baseball fans might be able to get into a dugout if they were called into an emergency situation like you're being called into. I'd be able to fake it for a game, right?
Yeah.
They can sort of, oh, it's the seventh inning. I need to get a reliever up. Yeah, I need to get ready. I need to have a pinch runner ready if I'm behind in the game to see if we can maybe steal a base. I could fake their way through it. You've never seen past, I guess, by the third inning.
I know what a reliever is. You know, you walk, you see the baseball man, the thrower, and you go up to him, pitcher. You go up to him. And you just kind of look around and then you just start chatting with him, but nobody knows what you're saying. And then he holds up his baseball hand to cover his mouth. So you can't see what he's saying. And you just get up and you go, listen, we rumble, rumble, grumble, grumble, grumble. So it looks like you're having some kind of a powwow. And
right.
then you walk away. And then other times you'd be like, hey, come with me. And then he comes with you. And then another guy runs out and he starts throwing the ball. So it's kind of random.
They talk strategy during those moments.
You'd think.
You understand. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about like what your, you know, speech is going to be like your inspirational, like, you know, the end of the movie in a sports movie type of speech, to your team to get them fired up to go and beat the Orioles?
Yeah, I'm going to have a big backdrop, a big American flag, huge oversized American flag.
Yeah.
And I'm going to walk out in front of it. I'm going to be like, boys and girls, today is a big day. Today is the day that we make history. In a few minutes, they're going to make weird noises with the organ. And you got to run out there onto that field and do stuff that baseball people like. I want you to get out to where you like to stand. I don't care if it's on that side, or on the lump in the middle, or the white dots. Whatever you want to go to, you go stand near it and you do your thing. But if you're near the white base dots, bring your base pole, because you will need that to touch the base. You guys need to chew stuff. You need to spit stuff and do baseball things. Your Honor, I'm finished.
Oh, that's that's a really weird ending to a baseball speech. Okay, well, that will certainly be remembered forever.
There you go.
Good luck this season, pal.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
You're very welcome.
So, hey, Brian.
Yeah, Jack. O-E-E-E-J-A-C-K. Jack. Jack. Jack?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just hoping it was over.
Now it is.
You're known for many things, the worldwide, you know, obviously as a great baseball man, mm-hmm. A decent father.
Yeah.
A wandering husband.
Right.
There's so many things that Brian Sack is known for. Right.
Yes. Yes.
I know you best as an inventor.
Yeah, that's right.
You've at this point, how many patents do you think you've filed?
You know, there's a point in a man's life when he stops paying attention to the number of patents that he's filed. And I've passed that mm-hmm. point, but maybe like 700.
That six. Seems like a lot. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, filing patents is easier than ever now. You just do it with patentme.com.
All the bit. Was that one of your inventions?
Yep.
Tell us about your patent me invention. Right there. We're going to start off with your own invention that you yourself just brought up.
Yeah, it's just an online self-patenting website that allows you to file a patent for whatever, whatever.
That seems like a very generic invention.
Yeah, I mean, the patent office didn't approve that one.
Oh, so it's a patent pending or?
It's patent denied. They got a lot of people, you know, trying to patent things like flying machines, which have already been done. Combustion engines already been done.
Yep.
Horse tranquilizers for America's dad to put into cocktails, already been done.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you wear underneath your outside clothes to kind of insulate your nether regions, already been done.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you can swim in the ground, covered in vinyl, diving board, already been done.
Mm-hmm.
Stores that sell plants. Done.
Yeah, that's a hot patent. I remember that one.
Things that hang, that kids sit on and swing back and forth. Done. Can't patent.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. you know, after 300 and so thousand of these patents, they're like, this is nonsense. Stop this.
Hey, well, hey, you know what? Like you said, not all inventions can be winners. That was a good first swing.
Thanks, Jack.
Now, you mentioned combustible engines.
Yeah.
So ironic, because I know you invented what you called a hydrogen motorcycle.
Yep.
What is a hydrogen motorcycle and what do you hope to do with it?
Well, I was inspired by the Hindenburg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people saw a dirigible that kind of burst into flames and fell to the ground, killing 38 people in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I saw opportunity. So what I saw was the fact that hydrogen is lighter than air. I think it was proved that day that it's lighter than air as long as it's not on fire.
That's so right.
This is what I wanted to do. I was inspired by speeder bikes from that movie.
Return of the Jedi?
Yeah. So they're driving through the Ewok village in the woods. And he's on that speeder bike. And what I loved about it is there's no gravity.
That's right.
It's anti-gravity. So I'm like, okay, well, he's lighter than air. So what's lighter than air? The Hindenburg, when it's not on fire. So how can I recreate the Hindenburg, but make it like a motorcycle that people can sit on and glide over the ground as long as it's not on fire? So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So my first prototype was I got a large 500 gallon propane tank and I put a saddle on it and I let all the propane out. Let all the propane out. The environmental people were bullshit. And after it dissipated, I filled up that tank with hydrogen. I sat on the saddle. And I didn't go anywhere because what I didn't know is that propane tanks are very heavy. They're made of metal.
Yeah.
Metal is heavier than hydrogen. And so I couldn't get off the ground. So I went back to the drawing board and I thought, all right, I need something that can hold the hydrogen, but not easily burst into flames in New Jersey. So what can I use? And I thought about it and I got a sofa cushion. I took out the inside stuffing.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was bullshit.
Okay.
Left it all over the living room. Went outside. I zipped up the cushion except for a little bit. I stuck in the hydrogen hose and I filled up that cushion with hydrogen and I put a saddle on it. And I learned that sofa cushions are permeable. So I went back to the drawing board.
Yep. Ooh, so this is prototype three.
Prototype three. I needed something that I could put a saddle on, but that wasn't too heavy to float, but was also not permeable so that the hydrogen that I was going to put in would stay there.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to the local 7-Eleven and I said, may I have a box of your finest condoms? And he looked at me and I said, and make sure they're extra large. And I looked at him and he kind of gave me this glance as if he knew I shouldn't be buying those. And he took them off the shelf and handed them to me and it was $17.99. And I brought them back and I filled all those extra large condoms with hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And I tied them all together and I put a saddle on it.
Okay.
And I'll be damned if I didn't glide over the surface. I drifted ever so slightly. And then slowly came to rest about 4 feet from where I began. So I won't say it was the speeder bike experience I was hoping for, but I did defy gravity and I did not burst into flames in New Jersey.
So, and this is what you're calling your hydrogen motorcycle?
Yes. Some say that's misleading because there is no motor. You're just sitting on a bunch of extra large condoms that have been filled with hydrogen. And topped with a saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no cycle aspect to it.
It's kind of hard to argue with those folk, isn't it?
It is. And they had proposed floating condom saddle, which to me sounds demeaning. You know, you're not going to say, I need a place to park my floating condom saddle. That just sounds weird.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be like a lot of, you know, a floating condom saddle bars, like biker bars.
Yeah.
Whew, that was a lot to take in.
That's what people who use extra large condoms hear a lot.
Okay, maybe we should move on.
Sure.
You had said you're big into food coloring.
I love coloring food.
And so you've invented, because they've had some problems with this, but you say you've invented red dye number 15.
Mm-hmm.
With all the issues with red dye in the past, what's your patent for red dye number 15? What is that? What does it do? How does that take care of some of the problems with the previous red dyes?
The problems with the previous red dyes is that they were, I guess, carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to think, let's not dye stuff with carcinogens. And that was my first idea. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, we need stuff that's red and doesn't cause cancer. Well, what's red and what doesn't cause cancer? Well, cranberries and blood and some types of rust. Uh-huh. So what I did was I gathered a bunch of cranberries. I cut myself with a rusty blade and added some blood to the mix.
Okay.
I put that all in the Vitamix. My wife was bullshit. Still upset about the sofa. Didn't make things any better.
Oh, I bet.
But then I had a pureed mixture that contained rust, blood, and cranberries.
Cool.
And then I thought, well, now I need to add it to something, right?
Right.
So my wife has Fiber One cereal.
Of course she would.
Loves fiber.
Yep. She's from Poland. I get it.
So I took the Fiber One and I added my red dye number 15. I shook it up in the bag, put it back mm-hmm. in the cereal box, and I waited. The next morning, I heard shouting downstairs in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Was it shouting for joy? Or was it shouting out of anger? I didn't know. I just heard shouting. Mm-hmm. But I knew that she had discovered her new red Fiber One.
Yeah.
I ran downstairs. I tripped on the sofa stuffing that my wife had left in the living room because she refuses to pick it up because it's my mess, is what she said. I got up and made it to the kitchen. She's standing mm-hmm. there with this look of, is it consternation? Is it excitement? It's consternation. She's holding her red Fiber One in the bowl. And she's looking at me and saying, quizzically, what the blank is this?
Right, right.
And of course, I said, red dye number 15. And I did the arms akimbo thing.
Right, right.
And she stared at me, and that was kind of our last interaction. She told me to blank off, and she took the car. So I've been kind of immobile.
Oh, you poor guy. Super cool question. Did it make her Fiber One, which is one of the most boring things you could eat on the planet? Did it give it a little more pep?
Well, what it did is it turned it into a congealed ball of red mm-hmm. that just plops out into your bowl. So, and it sends the milk everywhere. Mm-hmm. It did kind of dye the milk, but as far as cereal goes, it looked like a giant red ball with bits of rust in it. And it didn't seem like something you'd appetizing.
Yeah.
So there's a method to adding color to food that I have not perfected. Apparently you can't pour a liquid on a dry food and expect it to look the same.
Oh, wow.
That was not something I knew.
I just want to ask you about one final invention.
Yep.
You say you have sort of inspired by parachute pants. You invented a parachute hat.
Yes.
Tell us about it. Why?
There's a local airport and they have a skydiving club. It got me thinking about parachutes. And mm-hmm. how, you know, they're light and yet they will block out the sun.
Yep.
And so I went there and it's, you know, it is the country up here. So the doors are unlocked and I went into the warehouse where they store all the parachutes for the skydive team. Mm-hmm. And I would open up one and I would just cut out some circles, hat shaped circles. And then I'd roll up the parachute and stuff it back in the bag. So nobody's the wiser. And I went and I did that for the 15 parachute backpacks that I found. So then I had mm-hmm. my prototype. I had about 78 parachute hat prototypes. Mm-hmm. And I brought those home and I tried different things. I stapled strings to them. I glued strings to them. Because the idea was I was thinking of something you put on your head. It looks like a parachute, like, but it's hanging over your head, kind of, you know, flowing in the air. So it almost looks like a mini parachute over your head. What I didn't realize is that for parachutes to really work, you need to be falling through the air.
Right.
And then the parachute hat will kind of lift up and protect your head from the sun. And then the strings that I've stapled or glued or tied on will kind of keep it connected to your collar thing that you put around your neck. The strings attached to it, the parachute hat's floating in the air. So really, for the parachute hat to work, you need to be in basically falling to some degree.
Sure.
So what I advise people to do is to just jump up and down when they're wearing the parachute hat.
Oh, that's a lot of work.
Or to, you know, jump off of small ledges.
Okay.
And then you kind of get the parachute experience, because how a parachute works, of course, is the wind, you know, hits the underside of the parachute, and that resistance kind of keeps you from falling dramatically.
Yeah.
But that resistance is greatly reduced if you have 17 holes in your parachute that are parachute hat shaped. Then suddenly you're like a sieve. From a distance, if you look up in the air, it looks like somebody's wearing a parachute hat, but they're falling and screaming. But it looks like a hat from that distance.
Right. You know, I'd love to just sort of get the opposing side of this invention. Are there any members of the Skydiving Club who could come on the show and sort of talk about their experience?
Not as of Sunday. It was a gorgeous day. Not a cloud in the sky.
So when you looked up, what would you see?
I looked like parachute hats descending very rapidly. And I kept thinking, it's a shame those people don't have like a hydrogen saddle.
That was Questionable Material by Brian Sack and Jack Hellman. Visit us on the web at qmpodcast.com.